Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce School Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by Lisa Roser from 50 Flowers, been building her business for over 20 years and built a really impressive international business. As we get into, she went down to Ecuador, ended up learning about the flower industry and trade, started a business there, and now she imports eight figures worth of flowers every year into the United States, sells them across the US, and pretty amazing story. We get into a bunch of different facets of it. The logistics behind international flower shipping is really interesting. They do something to the flowers that really surprised me. It makes it possible. We talk about that. We talk about why she doesn't have a C-suite, even with, you know, a very large team, or at least she doesn't call them the C-suite. Her leadership and kind of management style, how she finds out and hears about every single customer complaint across the entire company. And also one of the biggest hacks for her in terms of building a stronger team, and that is personality testing. So we dive into what she uses, how she has used it, and what it's done for her ability to build a strong business. Anyway, love the conversation. Even talk about potentially taking a crew of ECFers down to Ecuador at some point to see her operation on the ground. It should be a ton of fun. So if you're in the community, stay tuned for more details on that. And yeah, really looking forward to sharing this one with you. It was a lot of fun, and we'll get into it right after this. Today's episode is brought to you by the E-Commerce Fuel Private Community, the most vibrant and active discussion forum for owners of seven and eight-figure e-commerce businesses. So how is it any different from other communities online or DTC Twitter? Three big reasons. First, it's vetted. Everyone inside owns a seven or eight-figure business. Average member does about $5 million top line per year. About 15% are doing it with eight figures. You get advice from owners who have actually been there in the trenches, and that you know you can trust it because we vetted them and they're actually doing what they say they are. Secondly, no pitching. There's no affiliate links, no vendors hawking stuff at you. This is just real operators sharing what's working. And then finally, reciprocity is one of our biggest values when we moderate. We require that everyone shares something when they come in, so you learn from them, but also we don't let people just come in and strip mine the community for information, so you get a really healthy dynamic group. So confident this will be a game changer for your business that we offer a 10x ROI guarantee. Join the community, stay for a year, and if you don't see 10x the value relative to your membership fees, we'll refund all of them plus give you $1,000 just for the hassle. So if it sounds interesting, check us out. We'd love to have you apply, and you can learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Attention Shopify sellers, say goodbye to annoying design limitations and outdated user interfaces. Now you can customize every inch of your website with the brand new landing page builder inside the Zipify Pages app. Zipify Pages just released their biggest upgrade ever, so now you can drag, drop, or swap any element on practically any page to make your store look and perform exactly the way you want it to. Zipify Pages was created by my friend Ezra Firestone, founder of a $175 million Shopify store, and it's packed with over 70 marketing templates you can use to generate leads, run promos, and scale any brand. And because the templates come from Ezra's own eight and nine figure brands, you know they actually work. You can try Zipify Pages and their brand new builder for free for 14 days at zipifypages.com. That's Z-I-P-I-F-Y pages.com. I'd love to start. I'm not a huge fan of origin stories for people. I think a lot of times they're just not as interesting necessarily as where people are. But I think yours is an exception because you started the business. You've been running it for 20 years plus, and you came out of the Peace Corps, and it's kind of genesis of Peace Corps, Ecuador, and flowers. I'd love to hear the quick and dirty backstory because it's very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. The more and more I tell the story, I'm like, did this really happen? Like it's a dream within it's like it's a fairy tale. But I joined Peace Corps right out of college, moved to Ecuador, and there's a serendipitous twist to it, which we won't dive into, and fell in love with the country, did not want to leave, found a job running an accounting department for a flower exporter, and quickly realized that was not my cup of tea and jumped into the growing side and the selling side of the flowers. And, you know, just built up a book of clients, branched off, started my first business in 98, which is farm exports. And we sell business to business. and then moved into the e-commerce, once I realized there was this missing gap and there was a problem to solve, is what we talk about now, of I was seeing all these beautiful blooms, and the flower industry is very traditional, and a red rose is just a red rose, but I saw all these different variations of a red rose coming out and wanted to get those to the consumer's hands. And I tried through my B2B business. People were not interested in the change. And so I started my first website coding. I actually didn't code. I found a coder in Michigan who worked for an apple farm and a designer who was just finishing up a tour in Los Angeles and doing some work on a movie, and flew him down and said, let's build our first website. And that was the birth of 50 Flowers.
How do you transport flowers from Ecuador to the United States? I'll go into a grocery store and I'll buy a banana for like 30 cents. And I think it is a miracle of modern day society that you can grow something in Central America, South America, ship it to America, and it's 30 cents and it makes it there. I just think it's mind blowing. Yeah. So flowers are even more delicate than a banana. How does that work? Like, what's the logistical side? How long are they in transit? What do you have to do to protect them? Like, for someone who's a total noob, how does that work?
Well, I think let's start with, if you order flowers from your local floral shop, which I'm a high, like, there is, we should be supporting our local flower shop. And those flowers can be up to 14 days, minimum of 14 days old. The traditional chain of distribution is it takes that long to get into your hands as a consumer. So flowers, first off, you know, there's a lot of science behind flowers. Every single flower you see started in a laboratory tube to where we genetically modify the flower for longevity. In fact, fun fact, flowers don't smell anymore, because if you keep the scent in flowers, it will decrease the vase life. And as consumers, you want flowers that last forever. You look at the value of the flowers, you place the value on the flowers, how long they'll last on your table versus how much they smell. And today we're breeding back in scent, allowing, because people are wanting scent back in. And it's all 100%, you know, a test tube. Getting back to how flowers are transported very carefully. We use a lot of what Gatorade solutions to keep them the longevity, very similar to if you're going to go run a marathon, what do you do first? You know, the night before you eat a spaghetti dinner, and that gives you, it pumps you up. So as soon as we cut a flower from a plant, that's the beginning of it starting to, you know, just wilt. So we put it in some Gatorade solution, we put it in cold. And this is general flowers. It's not every single flower, but you cut it, put it in water, put it in a refrigeration, you process it. That's where you select, you know, the ones that get exported and the ones that go back to genetic material. Then they spend the night in a cold room. And that's where, you know, that's prepping it for its journey. And then it gets to an international airport, gets flown to a port of entry. It goes through all types of screening. You know, does it have any bugs or viruses that we want to keep out of the United States? Does it have any, you know, extra white powder in it that it shouldn't? And so it goes through the drug test. And then it gets put from there. That's where it will either get put on a truck, it will go into an importer's cooler, or it can be overnighted to the client's doorstep. So, you know, as quick as overnight, I can get flowers from Holland to your doorstep.
That's insane. So everything is air, is shipped via air, at least from Ecuador to some distribution center in the US, and then it kind of goes out from there.
We started about, I would say, 15 years ago, toying with shipping in controlled containers via sea. Because, you know, my number one cogs, apart from running an e-commerce store and all of the marketing, if you would tie that into a COG. But my number one cost of my true products is shipping. It accounts for about 63% of the raw cost of my product.
So do you ship stuff via controlled sea container?
No.
You don't? Okay.
No. In fact, it's really interesting because when it comes to, you know, reducing your costs with my overnight shipping companies, they're like, well, you can ship with standard overnight, which the flowers will get there by 4 o'clock. And no, I won't compromise that. It's very important for all, you know, for my client who is on an emotional just surge. You know, you're 3 days before your wedding and you're expecting flowers. I don't want you sitting around till 4 o'clock to save, you know, pennies on a dollar. I want your flowers to you as soon as possible.
Yeah. The genetic component is fascinating. I never even thought about that. But I mean, it makes sense. People do it with, I mean, they do it with foods for shelf life. It makes total sense they would do it with flowers. Is that something that is like, is that a fairly widespread industry thing where you have Monsanto and there's like, we have an entire discussion with farmers about the good and bad there, of which there are both.
Yeah.
But is there some kind of Monsanto type player in the flower industry that like licenses all these types of flower breeds and you buy them? Or is it like IP is kind of isolated to different players? How does that all work?
So they're breeders and, you know, they own the genetic material of the flower. And it's a hot topic. In fact, when I first got into the industry, I didn't understand it properly. And then once I understood it, I quit a job because people were unethical. You know, my employers were unethical on the, you know, how they had copied people's, you know, breeders' genetic materials and were selling them without actually paying the royalties around it. Every variety is owned by a specific breeder. And the two are, you know, some of the larger breeders, they come out of Holland and Israel. This is a new chair. And we just put it together yesterday. And it's supposed to help with that whole, like, you know, neck and using a mouse. And boy, it's annoying.
Oh, so you've got the full-on headrest for people who are listening, like the full-on, like, Dr. Evil headrest back there.
I know.
It's like, giving you full support.
Oh yeah, trying to keep your body just, you know, moving and healthy. No, but back to the breeders. So we have breeders out of Israel, we have breeders out of, you know, out of Dutch breeders that own their own, you know, their proprietary genetic flower. It's like, you know, I always love to talk about it like blue jeans and, you know, the factories that are in South America, in Central America, that they're not licensed to produce Lee jeans or these Levi jeans, but they're slapping the label on them. And we hear about it getting shut down. The same struggle goes on with genetic, you know, genetic proprietary flowers.
Mm-hmm. What? So you've got a team in Boise, you've got a team in Quito. The team of Quito, I'm guessing, is doing most of the sourcing, exporting. Team in Boise, I'm guessing, dealing with most of the e-commerce side of things, you know, kind of distribution, things like that, leadership team. I could be wrong. How does that break down? Can you give me a sense? Because you have this really fascinating, I mean, a lot of people are starting to hire more in Latin America. You've been running a business there for 20 years. Well, how does that team break down? What does it look like? And what are the specialities that you find in the US and, you know, in Quito?
The way that we divide it as we have front and back end, you know, and our front end is everything pretty and our back end is all of the ops. So up here in the United States, because we are, you know, we primarily ship with the B2C company, consumers is within the United States. So all of my front end, all of my marketing support, you know, my social team, my production team, we produce that up here. My thought leadership is also up here in the States. You know, my CMO, my CXO, my CTO, which honestly, we don't even use the C words unless I'm talking to e-commerce fuel, because that's when it's important to say, yeah, I got a C-suite. But what I found is when you have a C-suite, guess what? a big ego comes with it. Mm. And we've been through that whole C-suite, and now we're just heads of, including myself. I'm just a fire chief. That's what I like to call myself to our team. However, up here is more of like a thought leadership and anything that is pretty. Down in Quito, we do all of the back end. You know, my biggest team down there definitely is my sourcing team. And we like to call them product specialists because we just don't buy flowers. You know, we cultivate relationships with our vendors and we make sure that we place our orders with our vendors. We also have, you know, my bookkeeping team is in Ecuador. We do, we processed a lot of invoices, farm invoices and billing and just export paperwork and labeling. There's a lot that goes on with that team. I also have a large customer care team in Ecuador that, you know, when the phone rings, it rings down there. That's not that cool today, but 10 years ago, that was a really cool thing to have down there. And we also have developers that are located in South America, in Quito and Guayaquil.
And do you have a, is everyone remote down there? Or do you have an office in Quito?
Where no, we have an office in Quito.
You have an office.
Yeah, we have an office. Now, my tech team is remote because it just works that way. Mm-hmm. Everyone else comes into an office. And we spend a lot of time out at our farms as well. It's a constant evolving product line.
So I Ben spent a month in Ecuador once. And I'm curious and meant to ask you how the country is doing because it's kind of been had some interesting times recently. What I would never have guessed that Ecuador was a hot spot for flowers. Like, is that did you just happen to find one little corner, or is Ecuador a big like is that are the chances if you order flowers, there's a good chance that some of them come from Ecuador? Is that what they're well known for?
Yes, it's in the top three exports of Ecuador. And it is, you know, 25 years ago when I got into flowers, it was an up and coming. And today it is one of their top, you know, producing exports. Number two, Ecuador, comparatively to Colombia, 80% of the flowers that we consume in the United States are from Colombia. And so it's not as big as Colombia, and at the same time, Ecuador is more of an eclectic, higher, you know, a diversified product line of flowers. So, you know, in Colombia, you'll have a farm that produces, you know, the farm sizes, and don't quote me on this. I don't have my numbers memorized. I was just with Augusto Solano, who runs the export, you know, Association of Colombia. And I feel terrible that I don't know this, but I would say the average farm, the farms are huge in Colombia, like 300 hectares, where when you go to Ecuador, it's 20, it's 15. They're smaller. They're more boutique.
And I remember this was probably 10, 11 years ago, but spent a month in Ecuador, primarily a little bit in Quito, but mostly on the coast in a small town called Canoa, and have really good memories of that country and the place we stayed. We were actually right on the coast when the big earthquake that hit Japan back in 2011. And so I remember we like had to, early that morning, we all had to run up into the hillside and wait for, you know, the tsunami because people didn't know if it was going to come across the Pacific or not. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Were you there at the time?
I was not in there. I was actually sitting in, it was interesting. I was sitting in a urgent care with a friend who had gastric problems at the moment. So it was just kind of funny. I remember exactly where I was because I was trying to figure out why this person's stomach was hurting.
Oh, so, crazy. And probably watching, having lots of time on your hand to watch network television, I'm guessing, and news. How is Ecuador doing these days? Because I know like they had the hostage thing a while back where people broke in. The country has just been, it seems like it's had a little more turmoil recently. How's it doing? And has that affected your ability to run a business out of there?
Well, yes. And, you know, Ecuador is the wild, wild west. And when we look at it through our lens of, you know, we have controlled chaos and we have rules that people follow in the United States. And in Ecuador, what we hear about and we're just like, oh, you mean a cartel, you know, chief walked in and took over a news station. That's horrible. Is everybody okay? In Ecuador, it's, yeah, that happened. And what's going to be the next thing that happens? So, you know, Ecuador, it has definitely changed since it entered my life. You know, when I first got to Ecuador, it was Sundays, the malls were closed, and people were just content being with their families. And it was a true connection. And today it's rigmarole. People have debt because they want the bigger car. There's, you know, it's the landscape has really changed. About 7 years ago, we had our first finding of drugs and flowers. You know, we didn't have drugs in Ecuador. It was like this protected little eco environment that, you know, we were in between Peru and all that's happened in Peru and Colombia, and it just didn't filtrate into Ecuador. It's there now. In fact, I feel safer when I go to Bogota than when I'm in Quito. And Quito is my town. I mean, I'd lived there for almost 12 years, and I have incredibly wonderful friends in Quito. And I just feel as though the landscape has really changed a lot, unfortunately, in Ecuador.
It's too bad. I'm curious how, like, you've been doing this for 20 years. You've seen, you know, the evolution of not just the flower industry, but e-commerce. And we're in this period of e-com now where, like, you know, you were talking about costs, and I'm guessing, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but next to shipping, I'm guessing maybe marketing and customer acquisition is your number one cost. Could be wrong, but it's just gotten, and everyone, almost everyone listening can relate to this at various degrees. They're just, you know, all these public companies that have so much control over the internet traffic are just squeezing the juice out of, and you can't blame them. Anyway, I'm curious, how do you, when you sell flowers, the flower industry is such a large industry. And for someone on the outside looking in, it'd be easy to say, like, hey, it's a very commoditized industry. How do you stand apart from, like, the huge big players? How do you do that? Like, how do you think about getting customers at a reasonable cost? How do you differentiate what some would consider a commodity product?
You know, it's interesting. It's quite interesting because it has shifted. And back in the day, I was this crazy person that wanted to take bulk and drill it down to a small pack and put it in a really teeny tiny box and, you know, ship it overnight to the doorstep. And everyone looked at me like, you are a crazy lady. I had exactly. And I'm like, yeah, I am. And will you do it for me? And I had to beg my farms to do it. And then once we started doing it and I trained salespeople, well, then they left that farm and went to another farm and then introduced that to a new client. So this is where, you know, I can go back and think about, this is where I taught my competition, the big box stores, on how to sell wedding flowers. And yeah, everyone's selling wedding flowers. Post-COVID, everyone's selling wedding flowers. And what differentiates 50 Flowers from the big box stores or from my biggest competitors are, number one, is guess what? I only sell wedding flowers. And this is one of my favorite sayings is, I don't sell bulk tampons or lawnmowers. I know. It's great, isn't it? But
what about weed whackers? Any weed whackers?
Well, I could say weed whackers too. That's better than lawnmowers. I'm going to say bulk
tampons. No, I like lawnmowers.
Lawnmowers. Yeah.
I like the dichotomy between lawnmowers and tampons.
And tampons.
Both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, both sides. Like, we specialize in wedding flowers. And, you know, during the pandemic, I put in a, you know, flowerfix.com, put in, you know, a subscription service thinking, oh, well, you know, you've ordered from me before, it's one and done. Hopefully you don't get married again. And, but I, how do I, you know, how do I reoccur revenue? How do we, so we put in subscription. Well, yeah, that site is getting shut down in the next month because it's a different ballpark and we're not good at doing it. So when it comes to wedding flowers, you know, when it comes to servicing and differentiating ourselves outside of what our clients, you know, what our competitors do, is things are going to go wrong in your wedding. And wedding flowers are very sensitive, and you don't have an extra week to get the flowers to you. It is that time. And yeah, there are delays and there are things that happen. We've done it over a million times, and we're there to support you and get you through it. The other thing that is really, it's a constant battle is, well, you're so expensive compared to X, Y, or Z, and you pay for what you get too.
How do you, could you dive into that a little bit more in terms of how you communicate? Because really what you're selling there is reliability. The fact that, you know, you're the fact that you're not going to have plastic flowers picked up at the, you know, craft store because your flower company fell through on you. So how do you communicate that effectively? What kind of experiments have you done to really drive that home? And then also on the quality side, like how do you, you specialize, yes, but how do you really convey that to customers in your language and your photography and in any other ways throughout the buying purchase to help convince people that, hey, okay, what I'm paying for the premium is worth it?
We do a really poor job of communicating it right now. And that's where we're getting back to be in front of just going, look, the amount of time and passion that gets poured into, you know, every single one of our team members, we need to do a better job of explaining that. And we are. And it is, you know, it's been the focus of my production team, my social team the past 6 months is we need to show people the behind the scenes because I'm walking farms. I sit down and break bread with every single one of our farmers. You know something incredible that I just told our team about, and they're like, we didn't even know that. Every single one of our boxes that leave South America, I have a company, which I created the company, that they go in with a flashlight. They open up the little peephole with a flashlight. It says it has, you know, your white quicksand or your cream quicksand roses in it. We look in that box to make sure that it's in there because we're taking a huge, you know, these farms are trained to move massive amounts of flowers. And we're taking it down to a granular. This is going to Mary's wedding in Indiana. My packers at these farms, they're just putting flowers in a box and making sure that we tell the story and show this is what we actually do every single day for your flowers to make sure that you're going to get the right flowers. Because we've had so many problems in the past of them getting mislabeled that we're proactive. You know, Andrew, every single complaint that we get ever since I've started, and this is 22 years of shipping directly, I know about it. I have a meeting. In fact, I just told them we need to rename the meeting because it's called Bad Claims. And it's like, well, every claim is bad. So let's call it something like, you know, bettering, you know, something more, spin it on something more positive. But I know about it. And we go down and we say, how could we have fixed this and make it better?
I love that. It's kind of a strange question, but it's so cool that you get to know all of the farmers. Mm-hmm. You eat with them, you develop relationships with them. What would surprise people or what is really interesting about a farm in Ecuador when you walk down there? Like if you took me down, for example, never, or anyone who's never been down there to one of these farms and spent the day touring these farms, are they larger? Are there a lot of small, like family run ones? Or what are the people like? What would stand out to people walking through these things? I just think that's such a fascinating part of, of your business and your story. Yeah, it's the cool place that this stuff comes from.
For me, what always surprises me, there are so many things going through my head right now, I have to say, because this is where I really get fun and excited and entertained and my passion shows, is how much work and how you can't plan Mother Nature. And the amount, it doesn't matter how much you work, how much you try to plan, how much you put in. We build bonfires in the middle of our greenhouses sometimes because it's not warm enough to get our crop to, you know, produce for Valentine's Day. You know, there's so much passion and tenacity that goes into growing flowers, and at the same time, so much that's out of our control. And the amount of specialization it takes to get the flower from seed to export is phenomenal. And I would love to do an e-commerce fuel field trip to Ecuador. In fact, I'm going to challenge you on that. And let me walk you around. I just flew down with FedEx and 14 of their digital producers. They did a spotlight on 50 Flowers and Me for their whole flower program. And bringing these people down and walking the farm, in fact, they had some local people that were part of their team. And they're like, we drive by these every day and we've never seen it. It's just, it's eye candy. It's magical. And it's against nature in a certain way, but it depends on nature.
Hey, Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Phil from Saddlebox.net, which is a pet subscription box for equestrian enthusiasts. And met Phil at multiple events. He's been a member since about 2020. And here's what he has to say about his experience with e-commerce fuel, our private vetted community for 7- and 8-figure founders.
I don't know if I could give you just one single example of how ECF has helped my business. So many different ways. I mean, operations, finance, hiring, software, advertising, even learning how to have a better family life as an entrepreneur. If you have any kind of a question that has to do with e-commerce and being an entrepreneur, there's going to be someone in the forum who's experienced the same problem and has suggestions on how to solve it. It's a terrific resource.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. When you're out there, you talked about building bonfires and kind of nature, being at the whims of nature. Are most of these irrigated? And this is, I mean, at this point, we maybe lose some e-commerce people for the raw strategery, but that's all right. They can go. I'm curious.
Well, we can talk e-commerce here in a bit too, as much as you want.
Yeah, we have time for that. But are these just like, hey, kind of old school, if the rain falls, our flowers are going to be okay. If the rain doesn't fall, we're kind of screwed for the kind of thing.
No, it's all
irrigated.
It's all irrigated. And you have big ponds that you keep the rainwater comes off. You know, there are certain farms that they recycle 100% of all the water that they use, but we're constantly capturing water. Water's an issue. Water is going to be an issue. You know, everyone thinks AI is going to take off and do amazing. Well, guess what? We need water for AI to cool down everything. And it's that might be the blocker of the development of water. Water, it's an important resource.
Well, it's crazy. I was reading, a couple of years ago about Mexico City, how it's like going to potentially run out of water. And like everything in the news, you kind of take with a grain of salt, like, hey, but I work with someone in Mexico City. And I asked her about 3 months ago, I was like, is this a thing? And she's like, yeah, it's a real deal. We're like super close to running out of water. It's the biggest city in the Western Hemisphere. So you combine like the trend already with some of the AI stuff.
It's kind of
wild.
Oh, well, you ready for this? In Quito, this is one of the challenges of running a company. We depend on water in Cuenca for our electricity. And when it doesn't rain, we have electrical rations. So you'll go 8 hours without electricity.
Is that because it's all hydro and it comes down out of the reservoirs?
Yep.
Okay. Dang.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are fun days.
Amazing. Those are really fun days.
I'm curious, you had said, thank you for everything you've added in the forums and in our community. You've been a phenomenal member. It's been a joy having you in the ECF.
Kind of fallen off the past couple of months, but I'll get back there. It's the season. It's a season of, that's part of balancing it. I have kids going off to college. I have, starting high school. There's just a lot going on.
Oh, yeah. No worries at all. We all go through that. It's one of the challenges of running a community of entrepreneurs is everyone's tends to be rather booked. So it's not unique. But that being said, I remember in your kind of experience share, we ask all of our new members who come in to share something with the community as kind of part of joining. And you talked about how for a long time, you had struggled getting people, everyone here, everyone listening struggles with hiring. If they don't say they never have, they either are divine or they're lying to you, one of the two. And everyone struggled with that. But you found something that really helped increase the statistics and the chances of success dramatically. Can you talk a little bit about that and that journey? Because I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. In fact, you know, your team is everything. And if I could say my biggest hurdle in building this business has been finding the right players and the right seat. And, you know, I was introduced to Culture Index. You know, it's one more tool that we use. And it's pretty impressive how spot on it will, you know, it gives you a clear understanding of your candidate, how they are going to react under are they going to be very important that they're socially liked? And if so, you know, I don't know if I want someone who is, you know, highly looking for social engagement to be my personal assistant. So it's one more tool that we use to bring on our potential employees. Now, how do we actually use it? So I'm looking for an EA right now. And as I'm looking for my executive assistant, I went through and I filled out a form and it asks you, what would you like? And then it typifies who I'm looking for. And there are three profiles I'm looking for that are Culture Index. People, when they start to, you know, when they apply, we ask them to fill out the Culture Index. We give it to you free of charge because you fill it out. And it's a report and it will typify you into one of 19 profiles. So, you know, I'm looking for an administrator, I'm looking for an operator, and I'm looking for a tech expert. And those are just three labels, and there are people that will work well with me and my profile, which is a trailblazer. So that's one tool that we used. Now, I made some serious mistakes with this tool because we went all gung-ho, just going, yeah, okay, now we're looking for a tech expert. Here are five. Who's the best tech expert? Let's hire this person. We didn't go and look at, you know, did they really have the skill set to do this? Like, had they ever been an EA before? And that was a huge learning curve using, you know, employing Culture Index in part of our hiring process.
So Culture Index, it will, for the EA example, mm-hmm. will you say, hey, I'm looking for an executive assistant, and it will give you the three types mm-mm. of the 19 that would fit well for that role?
No, there are only 19 labels in Culture Index.
Okay.
Okay. So I actually fill out a form going, do I want this person to be, you know, to be an independent thinker or a rule follower? And I actually go through a test that then will say, this is who we're looking for. You should look for this type of person. And so whenever we hire anybody, if you're going to either manage this person or work with this person, then you're going to take the pretest of who we're looking for. What label should we be looking for? And then Andrew, on top of that, I have a phenomenal coach that I pick up the phone and I call him, or my HR director will pick up the phone and call and say, you know, we're looking for a, you know, a social media copyright person. And we'll talk through these are the three profiles that we nulled it down to. Which one would you say is more fitting? And he helps us choose.
Got it. Okay. So it asks you the traits that you want. Mm-hmm. You fill out traits that match up with that role. It spits out one of those 19 profiles, yep. And then you can use that as people take it inbound to see if they're a good fit for that. Is there also an element of, whenever you're hiring, you have like the elements of, okay, I need the skills for this role, but you also have the organizational values and culture yep. that people need to like yes. fit in with, right? And those are very different things, right? Like you could
very
be
different.
Someone could be a project manager, very detail oriented, have a good sense of timing and perspective, but from a cultural perspective, they maybe need to have a good sense of humor because the whole team is
oh yeah
you know pranking each other incessantly.
Yeah, and we do.
So does that sounds like a good place to work. Is that part, can Culture Index also give you a insight into that? Or is that more something you suss out like in the interview process?
You know, I don't think that on paper you would ever be able to read somebody's personality as in depth. I mean, for us, fitting into our culture, Andrew, is so important to where we have a completely separate interview process. Once you, you know, there are four tiers to our interview, to any position interviewing in this company. And one of them is, are you a culture fit? And, you know, this just happened with a gal we just hired. I was, you know, I went out to my team and said, team, I need you to interview this gal. You know, would you go hike up Table Rock, take a hot yoga class? Would you want to go have lunch with her? Because voraciously, I'm going to protect our culture and the just the environment that we have here, because I don't want people to come here because they need a job. I want them to work on our team because they want a job. And we do that with everybody we hire. We do a culture. And it's you know, it's interesting. I was just listening to somebody about, you know, the question of, I'm paying people to do these assessments throughout the interview process. Do you think it's fair? We give a $25 Amazon card. And my whole thought on that is no, I'm not going to pay you. You know, you, I want you to do this to prove that you believe you are good enough to join our team.
Your culture sounds intriguing, maybe partially because I'm just a prankster as well.
Oh, we have fun.
But yeah, I want to tell me more about that. Like what, when you're, tell me a little bit more about like what makes someone a really good fit at 50 Flowers, what your culture is like, the things that you embrace, the things that you can't stand and that you will, you know, eliminate people from consideration, even if they're a great fit otherwise. Yeah. How does that look like? And I don't know if you have like three or four stated core values or if it's a little softer and just, you know, it when you see it, but I always am fascinated at the different type of little petri dishes. And I say it in the best possible sense that you get to create as a founder, because they're so interesting.
Well, you know, this is actually part, one of my favorite parts of the entire environment, because I am such a learner and constantly reading and constantly empowering people to be better at being themselves, not necessarily as an employer building this company. I believe that if you show up your best self, whatever that best self is, then you are going to do good. And that's what we ask from here. And, you know, we're in the middle of rewriting our core values. However, I can talk about some of them. Number one is be awesome. And what does that truly mean to be awesome? That means if you're in the customer care team and you've had a day to where you've just kind of been beaten down four times and that fifth phone call comes and you know you can't be your best self, I don't want you answering the call. I want you to go walk around the block, reset, so that when whatever you do, you're going to be the most awesome person at it. You know, another part of what we encourage is you're hired to program. 80% of the time, you program. The other 20%, find something you're passionate about other than programming, and let's get you working in it. You know, and we had this one gal, she was my favorite gal. She's moved on because she grew out of e-commerce and she's now working in, you know, big AI. She loved to take pictures. So we let her just become our photographer. She programmed 80% of the time and did photography work 20% of the time, which you're like, really? That's like so.
That's a unicorn, very unicorn. Different brain mm-hmm. parts. Yeah.
And then, you know, another part of being awesome is I have pet peeves that I'm going to be selfish. I want to work on, I want to eliminate the word sorry. So today, if you say sorry, no matter where you are, no matter what clothes you have on, you're going to drop down and do a push-up, because we are going to eliminate that together.
I love the push-up things. We use that as punishment in our house as well. So I'm very much on board with that.
I don't know if it's punishment or awareness. You know, because it's an overused word. And personally, I'm working on just my speaking skills. So if I say like, or, you know, just any filler word, I have to do a sit up. And last week we started a masterclass and I did a lot of sit ups.
If you can think about the last person you had to let go, how long did it take you to realize they weren't a good fit? And looking back with some hindsight, what was the mistake you made in bringing them on?
Right there, last person I let go, it was 2 weeks ago. And it was heartbreaking because it was my EA and she was extremely qualified. And we went through the whole culture index. And there are a couple things that happen. Number one, I knew within 2 months and we went on two more months. So I wish I would have been more true to myself and stopping and stop holding on to the hope that she was a fit. That's, you know, it's, you know, the saying is, what is it? Hire slowly, fire fast. And this was more of we're just not a right fit. Number two, really important, and I would say the past 4 years in business, what I have learned is clear as kind, to Brene Brown state, that it's the more clear you can be, the more kind it is. And, you know, I have a couple people on my team right now that, you know, I can really think about it. They are not a fit. And we are being weak by keeping them on. And you know that saying, something's better than nothing? That's our complete opposite this year. Is the way to get from good to great is expect great and hold true to great. And, you know, when I look back in the hindsight of in the hiring process, where did we go wrong? And specifically in this one incident is, you know, everything lined up. And the one thing that was off was culture and understanding that, you know, I run a multicultural company. I have employees in 5 continents. Like, I understand that there are certain, you know, I can make exceptions. You know, in Ecuador, we all know this, mañana is not mañana, you know, and we understand that, we work around that, we've built in ways to where we can work around that. But when it comes to my EA, I need you to be in similar to me in certain ways more than not. And we missed that one. This wonderful lady was from India. She had an MBA and it's just the culture did not fit.
So what was it you were saying about HeyGen is a tool you're using for blogging and content?
Yes. HeyGen is, I found it, I would say 3 months ago, and we started toying around with it. And they create avatars that you can take and put on any product or any background. So we're going to use HeyGen for 2 specific uses. Number one, on every single one of our products, we have these DIY flower kits, which are cantankerous. I need to be able to explain what comes in the box. So it's a curated collection of all the different products. So I'm going to be on the very bottom as an avatar talking about what comes in the products as we flash the pictures up. When you go to Amazon, and you know all the Amazon, if you go to a Dyson ad, it will have all of, you know, the information on there. And it'll talk through it and it'll populate and it's as though, and there's somebody talking on the bottom. The cool thing about HeyGen is from your URL, it will pull and write up your script from your product page.
That's crazy. So I'm looking at it right now, trying to wrap my head around this. So you can create an avatar that is more or less like you've got some avatar from either pick one that's pre-existing, or you can combine them and a
or
voice.
Your own.
And you could create Lisa, the AI avatar that would explain.
I'll show you my avatar. I don't know how to do it here. I'm not set up to show it to you.
I'm looking at the use cases though, product overviews, like you said, scaled outreach, learning and development. But really for e-commerce, you're able to at scale without having to film every one of these individually. How's the quality? Because it seems like there's so many AI tools that sound great on paper, and then you look at the output and it's kind of throw up in your mouth a little bit. Is this, how's it like 0 to 10? How does the quality of the video look?
Well, I'm extremely particular because I'm dealing with the do-it-yourself bride or the do-it-yourself couple. And I don't want to look like, and this was this, and I don't want to sound like that. We are 93% there to being able to launch it. My avatar looks great. Physically, I look great. My voice, the inflection and my passion in my voice is not there. That's why I've reached out to Matthias and said, help me. And my team's working with their team to get the voice done. And other than that, it's fabulous. In fact, there are certain words like ranunculus. Okay. When you read it, it's ranunculus, right? In AI, they've fixed it to where we can go through and say, this is the way you pronounce it.
That's super cool.
I'm impressed.
I'll have to check that out. HeyGen, HeyGen.com. We'll have to give it a look. I'm curious. You can take maybe either one of these. Well, actually, no, let's go to this one. 2024, it's been a rough year, I think, for a lot of e-commerce companies. It's just been acquisition costs are high. The economy is soft, at least from a consumer spending perspective. Almost everyone I talk to says sales are just... yeah, very sluggish at best for a lot of people. How's your 2024 been? Are you seeing similar things? Is there anything that you've seen, like any kind of encouraging sides of things, lessons you've learned from it, and just in general, how's it treated you? Because I know it's been a hard, challenging one for a lot of people.
2019 to 2020, the beginning of 2023, it was a challenging season for me, and a lot of it was personal. Battles that were going on, you know, I got divorced. This company was, you know, COVID hit, and we do flowers for events. So that was challenging. Just the landscape was very challenging. So when I fast forward to today, I've adopted EOS, which is Entrepreneur Operating System. It's another phenomenal tool that has made my business running it night and day. It's given it structure. It's kept my squirrelness and chasing shiny stars out and given my team a clear, and I like to call it boring and predictive environment, even though it's not. We're not there, but we are. We have goals, we have rocks, you know, we have our, you know, quarterlies. I have a coach that gets us through all of that. And, you know, this year, yes, we're shooting for a 20% increase. We're at 14% right now. But, and this is part of our culture, we have our shit together for the first time in a long time. And we're looking at, you know, saying no so that we can say yes to what we do best. And that has helped our 24 be better than our 22. And it's, you know, we're finally getting back to the basics and focusing on what we do best and how can we do best. I mean, in 2020, was it 2020? We switched over from proprietary front end to Shopify. And it was sloppy the way that we switched over. You know, I have my own ERP. You know, I run my own PMI, product management, product information management, whatever they're called, all these acronyms. I've done it all from scratch. And the flower industry is extremely particular. And so it's software that's developed for the flower industry. And when we went from, okay, Wild West, we can do whatever we want, into Shopify, like, no, you can't have select your delivery date. We didn't slow down to really adjust to that. We just said, okay, let's hire a company. They'll populate everything and make Shopify work for us. Well, that didn't work. And we spent 2022 cleaning that up. And 2023 now is like this really great launch into it. And 24, we're finally understanding Shopify, which sounds so silly. However, that struggle has made us real and made us value Shopify.
Well, it's funny that you say that because I'd say most of the time, occasionally, it's not common, but occasionally I chat with people who have built their own web platform or cart platform from the ground up. And it sounds horrific, right? Because you got to maintain the code. You can do everything with it.
No, but, it's awesome.
It is an insane amount of work. And usually when they go to Shopify or a platform that's a little more standardized, they're like, oh my goodness, this is fantastic. I didn't need most customization. I don't have to worry about hacks or maintenance. It just works. Yeah. But it sounds like for you, it was the complete opposite. So I'm curious, you know, what if you could go back in time and reverse that, would you stay on your proprietary platform
No, you wouldn't.
Okay.
What I would do though is retrain my tech team to think, no, we don't have to build it from scratch. There is an out-of-box solution that Shopify in the marketplace already has. And instead of trying to build it ourselves, we just need to think of a different way to leverage what exists. Because Andrew, managing your own front end, like I have worked with the FBI and found a hacker. And, you know, this Venezuelan doctor that was living in Miami, charges $500, shut us down in we were here in Boise shopping for houses. And it was like one of the first days I had taken off in forever. And I hadn't drank for a year. I could not make this shit up. I'm sorry, but this is my saying of this year is I can't make this shit up. And I'm at Chandler's. If you've ever been in Boise, it was our fanciest, you know, steakhouse. I order a martini and it comes and I'm like, let me check the website. It didn't go up. And I was like, what is this? Then I look at a message from one of my, you know, my customer service. She's like, yeah, this person wrote in saying, wire me $500 and I'll turn your website back on. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, we got hacked. And not having to worry about that, it's nice. It's nice. So, and not having to worry about like all the privacy compliances and all of it, it's really nice. However, if I could turn back, what I would have done from the get-go was let's really understand what we're getting into and let's adopt to it instead of trying to have it adopt to us and what we're used to doing.
Yeah, doing your due diligence up front and knowing like, hey, here's our non-negotiables that we need. Does this support those? Yeah, it can save a lot of headache going in.
Well, and we went through that. We did the whole like, oh yeah, you know, we went through all the different platforms of what we should do and then chose this way. Then it was like, just hire somebody to do it. Gosh, if it could only be that easy. How many people have hired a web designer to design their website? And then you're just like, oh, I'm in the process of doing that right now. I'm like, why did I even try to go that way? I have my own team and
Even if you're working with really good people, any kind of like, I've done probably half a dozen big migrations or redesigns in my career. And even if you have phenomenal people that you're working with, agency or in-house, it still requires a ton of attention, care, detail-orientedness to get it right. Otherwise, you're just asking for a disaster.
You're looking at it and you're like, this is 22 years of tribal knowledge. And
yeah,
everything like, I'm amazed at times that my brain has not exploded because I have been so hands-on and I know too much. And it's not that I want to micromanage. Trust me, that's the last thing I want because I want to be able to sleep through the night, not wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and be like, oh, we forgot about, you know, this. So it's just a lot. And, you know, agencies are interesting. And when you have, you know, my life cycle, okay, from the moment that you hit my website for the first time to where we capture your order is an average of 78 days.
Wow. Okay. That's a huge
78 days. And it's so emotionally charged. And it's so particular. And if I'm running a PPC and I'm bidding on 50 flowers, guess how many times you're going to click through because you're commuting on the train. And so you're on your phone. Then you sit down at your desktop, you know, at your work. Then you go to your mom's house afterwards. Then you're with friends. It's, you want to talk about cost of acquisition and having to understand and teach an agency that, no, we don't want to bid on our name. What we want to do is, you know, have some really kick-ass organic SEO.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much. This is super fun. And again, really appreciate you being at ECF. So good to meet you at Live for everything you've contributed in the forums. It's just been awesome having you in the community. And if you're listening, if you're getting married, if you know someone who's getting married, if you just want flowers that are amazing, check out 50flowers.com. A fantastic place to pick up all of those, of course. And then, man, the Ecuadorian field trip. I like your challenge
on
that.
Let's do it.
I think it would be super fun. I think it would be super fun to do.
I have boots on the ground. We will make it happen. We can visit like other e-commerce, like Andrew. Please, let's do it.
All right. Okay. I like your challenge. Challenge accepted.
And just for a moment, I want to say for all of us with ECF, and I know you hear this all the time, but thank you for what you have done for us.
Oh, of course. Thank you. I mean, I have one of the best gigs in the world. I get to talk with fun, smart, interesting entrepreneurs like yourself, bring people together for cool experiences. I mean, we're talking about like visiting Ecuador to go check out these cool flower entrepreneurial operations. Yes. Like, not a bad gig, right? But I appreciate it. And yeah, you're very welcome. But I've got a good gig. So, well, thank you. We will see you either in Boise or maybe in Ecuador next. So looking forward to it.
Yeah. Or wherever our next live is. Right.
Yeah. To be announced. It's going to be a slightly different scheduling this year.
Love it.
For a couple of logistical reasons, but great. Yes, we'll be announcing great. That hopefully in the near future.
I'll see everybody there. Wouldn't miss it.
That's going to do it for this week. A big thank you to OneClick Upsell, who offers incredible upsell software to get more from every single customer and increase your average order value on your site. To make more money from the customers you already have, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And if you own a 7 or 8 figure store, you really should be a part of our private community and forums here at eCommerce Fuel, where you can connect with over 1,200 store owners just like you. We're so confident it'll be a game changer that we offer a 10x ROI guarantee. If you don't see 10x your membership value in the first year, we'll refund you 100% of your membership fees plus toss in an extra $1,000 for the hassle. So you can learn more and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and look forward to seeing you again next Friday.